Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Busy day for the Fighting Irish football team. They signed six more players on the second national signing day for the class of 2018. Notre Dame has reeled in 27 players in the class of 2018, and a big day today for Brian Kelly, which included reeling in cornerback Noah Boykin. Very intriguing four-star corner added to this class of 2018. My name is Darren Pritchett, and welcome to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM, WSBT, on this Wednesday, February the 7th of 2018. Coming up on the program, wall-to-wall coverage of Notre Dame's National Signing Day. In 8 minutes, you'll hear from Notre Dame offensive coordinator Chip Long. At the bottom of this hour, Eric Hansen goes one-on-one with Fighting Irish head football coach Brian Kelly. He talks about the high ceiling for Boykin, how there is a possible road for one of the recent players that was dismissed to return to the Fighting Irish football program, and Brian Kelly unveiled a position switch in that conversation with Eric Hansen. You'll hear that entire interview coming up at the bottom of this hour. My five question of the day in about 40 minutes, the top five things that Eric learned from National Signing Day today. Next hour, we will have a conversation with brand new Irish defensive coordinator, Clark Lee. Tom Noy is co-hosting the 6 o'clock hour, so we will get to some Irish basketball conversation at 6:30. Notre Dame halted their 7-game losing streak last night by beating Boston College 96-85, and we'll wrap up next hour by playing back an interview with Notre Dame running back coach Autry Denson. But again today, the Fighting Irish signed six more players for the class of 2018, and four-star cornerback Noah Boykin was really the final piece of the puzzle, an 11th-hour signing by Brian Kelly and his staff. And so with Boykin joining this class of 2018, the Irish have five different players in this class that, if they needed, can play the cornerback position. Vital considering the Irish did not have a corner in the class of 2017. Boykin, 6'2", 168 out of Washington, D.C. According to our friends at IndyInsider.com, he last visited Notre Dame in October for the USC game and had offers from Clemson, Florida, USC, Georgia, Oklahoma, and others. 24/7 Sports has Boykin as the 25th best cornerback in the class of 2018. So you have Boykin, Tariq Bracey, Houston Griffith, Joe Wilkins Jr. Another corner was added today in DJ Brown. He is a 6'1 corner who picked the Irish over Northwestern and California, listed across the board as a 3-star prospect. 24/7 Sports has Brown listed as the 70th best cornerback in the class of 2018. Griffith, the very talented defensive back, is going to start out as a boundary corner with the Fighting Irish, but he is the type of player that could help out at safety. He could also play the nickel. So Houston Griffith, a player to watch in the class of 2018. He signed in December and is currently already enrolled at the University of Notre Dame. Also signing today, not a surprise, this has been something that has been on the back burner for a while. We knew Luke Jones wanted to sign with Notre Dame, and the offensive tackle picked the Fighting Irish today. He is signed, sealed, and delivered. Another offensive tackle joined the Irish, Jarrett Patterson. He picked the Irish over UCLA. 24/7 Sports has Patterson as the 17th best offensive tackle in the class of 2018. Across the board, a 4-star prospect. Patterson listed at 6'5", 275. Also joining the Fighting Irish program today, wide receiver Lawrence Keys. He is a 5'11 speedster. And according to Rivals, the 15th best wide receiver in the class of 2018. So a little more speed and another talented wide receiver in this class for Brian Kelly, with Lawrence Keys picking the Fighting Irish. And Notre Dame, when we get to the fall, at least the way it looks right now, we'll have four true running backs on the roster, and the fourth being running back Sebo Flemster, who picked the Irish today, a 6-foot, 192-pound running back. More on him when you hear from Autry Denson next hour here on 96.1 FM WSBT. So again, six players signed with Notre Dame today. Offensive tackles Luke Jones and Jared Patterson. Cornerbacks DJ Brown and Noah Boykin. Wide receiver Lawrence Keys and running back Sebo Flemster. Flemster joins Jameer Smith, another freshman on the depth chart at running back, along with Dexter Williams and Tony Jones Jr. Flemster had a spot available when Marquis Stepp, an original commit for the Fighting Irish, had to decommit and ended up, I believe, at USC, if I'm not mistaken. So Stepp unable to stick with the program. It is Flemster joining Smith as the running back in this class of 2018. So a lot to talk about with offensive coordinator Chip Long, who wrapped up his first season in charge of the Irish offense, and he put together some pretty remarkable rushing numbers for this football team. The passing game, as we know, is a work in progress. So we talked to Chip Long today about many things on the offensive side of the football, including what he is getting in this class of 2018, highlighted by quarterback Phil Jurkovec, who signed in December. So it is 13 minutes after the top of the hour, and let's begin some interviews by playing back Eric and I's conversation from earlier today on National Signing Day with Fighting Irish offensive coordinator Chip Long. Looks like a very interesting offensive line class, and you guys close very, very strong at that particular position. What do you like about the group, and also how did this group respond to Jeff Quinn's message?
You know, I like it a lot. You know, we're big, athletic, all of them can run, and that's what we want to be. We want to be a big front, tight ends, O-line, because we're a run play-action team. We want to impose our will, and you got to have size. And then to be able to add the athleticism to it, the guys who can get out in space and run, you know, you're just building that quality up front, and that's what we want to be, and that's the identity we want to have. And I think they all identified with Jeff. Jeff's been with Coach Kelly for a long time. He was my right-hand man all last year, so the transition was good. He's very good at building relationships with players, and, I mean, he's been coaching for 30 years, so, you know, there aren't many secrets, and just that he knows what I like and things that bother me, I think will help him with the transition very well. But the kids picked it up extremely well.
Yeah, Coach, I mean, Harry was such a institution here, and you come off a Joe Moore Award, and then he goes to the Bears. How difficult were maybe the first few days, especially when you didn't have a line coach, of kind of pivoting away from Harry with your recruits, because you still were recruiting offensive linemen?
Right. You know, and I was very, very involved with all the recruits. So, you know, I had that ability, that trust with them to tell them what we're going to try to do and what we want to do. So they believed me just because we've always had that open line. So it was an easy transition. It really was. There was a little shock when it happened, but, you know, that's the business these days. And that's why Notre Dame holds that power, because at the end of the day, you commit to Notre Dame. You don't commit to Harry Eastand, Chip Long, or one of us. And I think that helped and soothed things over. Coach Kelly did a tremendous job explaining it to the recruits as well. And then when Jeff was hired, he was able to hit the road running. You know, and also helps, we're only trying to go after four guys, too. You know, we already signed 21. So it was an easy transition.
With I think the fan base, sometimes they kind of look at Jeff's previous numbers and things when he was with Brian. And Brian was really had a different philosophy when he's at Cincinnati. And I think people were concerned that there would be a revert back to that. But this is your show and your offense. I mean, it would seem like the running game isn't going to disappear.
No, absolutely not. No, I mean, nothing's going to change. You know, when we came in, you know, what was easy with me and Harry is we believed the same things, and that's what I wanted to instill. And he did a great job of taking what I wanted and coaching it. And Jeff's going to do the same thing. We're going to be a physical team up front. We're going to be a run play action offense that goes fast. That is not going to change. We're going to be physical. We're going to be young, which is going to be exciting. But we got a good core nucleus up front, and the standard isn't changing. Nothing is changing at all. We just got to get better at the things we did last year.
You had two really good tight ends in the last class, Brock Wright and Cole Kmet, Tommy Tremble and George Takacs. It seems like tight end you kind of. What do Tremble and Takacs bring to the table with this class?
You know, once again, very big guys with extreme athleticism. Both of them can run, great ball skills. Both of them are extremely physical players. And different, you know, George might have a little bit more size. He's used to have his hand in the ground, where Tommy's been, you know, he was a great defensive end, so he saw his physicality, but, you know, was more of a skill guy in the slot that can move around. So, you know, we always want to have that variety and constantly building that year in and year out so we can keep different personnels without having to sub all the time and getting different structures that we'd like to have with that athleticism and size and physicality.
Jameer Smith at the running back position, how would you describe his style and also the opportunity he might have this year?
You know, they all have an opportunity. It's up to you if you want to capture it. He's a great fit, very, very smart young man, very serious young man. There's no nonsense to him. The ability that he's here already working out is big for him. And, you know, I've always believed as a running back, if you can do it as a freshman, you can do it, you know. So very excited to see him get involved in the offense. I'm waiting to see what all he can do. I know he's a good player, but I'm not going to put anything on him. Biggest thing I tell the freshmen is don't get frustrated, right? It's going to be a process. You got to learn. Just take your time. If you get frustrated, then your play's going to go down. It doesn't need to. We know this is your first time going out there, and he gets that. And just keep treading water. But, you know, just excited to see him. I think he's a great fit for that room. He's a great fit for our offense. And with his personality, and he has a tremendous work ethic. So he'll find a way, just like most kids here. If they have a work ethic and good attitude, they're going to find their way on the field.
Coach, I think it's your ex-receiver, Will Fuller's old position. Are there kids in this recruiting class that fit that profile that you think might get an early opportunity to compete for that spot?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to compare it to Will Fuller. That was like a once-in-a-generational guy. But, no, we got, like I was telling a couple other guys, I don't know if I've been a part of a class that we got, you know, four of our six top guys. Coach Alexander did a great job identifying them and being relentless and going to get them. Kevin Austin with his size, speed, great ball skills, you know. You turn on their tape, they're making a lot of contested catches. We didn't make any of those this year. You got to if you're going to win college football. You know, the windows get smaller, a lot of man free. You have to be able to feed man. Braden Lindsay, another guy with good size, 6 foot, 180 pounds, but was a great defensive player. So he has that physicality, those traits. And that's the biggest thing as a freshman receiver coming in is being able to work the perimeter, get off the jam. Be able to block somebody, and those guys have it. Micah Jones here right now, he's doing a great job. And then you have a Lawrence Keys with his speed and athleticism, return skills. So we got a whole lot faster, but without having to sacrifice a lot of size either. You know, we don't want to be really, really small out there and fast because there's only certain things you can do. You want to maintain, you know, 5'11 plus, but being able to run. That's what I'm excited about. Guys who can create separation and not just be a bunch of rebounders.
What are the top characteristics of Dracovic that is a really good fit for your system?
Man, he's a great winner and just a tremendous athlete. Good, nice, quick release. Been a part of a state championship team in football and probably be a state championship team in basketball. And that's what I like, you know, a guy who multi-sports. Because you got to think in basketball, all those passes, all those no-look passes, the windows you're working, those are just extra reps you're getting in football. And that's why you lose it if that's all you do. So I like that a lot with my quarterbacks that do play basketball. And just being a fiery competitor and his will to win is awesome. To go with his, you know, size, speed, and arm.
Where does Austin fit in the receiver group? Can he play all the positions? Do you have one specifically you'd think he'd be you want to get a look at him first.
Right. You know, and that's the ability of our offense. We'll move him around all over the place. You know, if you're making plays, you're going to be all over the field. You know, I think he's right now probably be a boundary receiver where you can get a lot of man. He can use his size and power for those one-on-ones. But if he's making a lot of plays, he's going to move all over the place, kind of like we did with EQ.
As far as Phil's concerned, do you want him in June thinking that he might be the starter in the fall? Do you want him with that kind of mentality?
Absolutely. I want all of our freshmen with that mentality. No question.
And as far as spring practice goes, where do you feel like the quarterback position is big picture going into the spring?
You know, I think it's in good hands. I think all those guys improved from when we got here. They still have a long ways to go with that group and with a lot of our groups. And, you know, I was talking to the guys down there. It's just, you know, it's every year the offense is different, which is exciting because we got a lot of young guys. And, you know, that bowl game was a glimpse of what spring ball could be like with five starters being out. And you saw guys go up there and raise their game. And which is really exciting, seeing those guys take it to the weight room right now and really attacking it. And, you know, in year two is always different. Some guys are really going to surprise you because they're just more confident. They're not thinking, do I go right or left right here? They know what to do and can play that much faster and confident.
What have you seen from Brandon in the winter workouts in terms of his mentality, and what do you want him to bring into the spring for competing?
Right, I still want him to trust the process. You know, I see a more confident young man, that's for sure, you know, with a lot of them. A better bounce to his step, you know, not much anxiety. He knows what to expect. He knows what the standards are. And to keep building on that and keep perfecting your craft. I can't just think of football when I step in this building. It has to be on your mind constantly, and especially if you're going to play quarterback here at the University of Notre Dame. It's a different deal. And there's an expectation you got to uphold, and it's not for everybody.
You have a lot of assistant offensive coordinators in the fan base that email me, and they want him to move positions. What would you say to somebody that wanted to give up on Brandon Wimbush at this point?
That's hard. I mean, a young man that led us to a lot of victories and one of the most explosive offense this place has seen in a long time. I'd say just give him time. His first time starter, just like any freshman or any young player. And if you rush it, you know, beware what you wish for.
Very good. Chip, thanks for the time.
You bet.
Chip Long, Fighting Irish offensive coordinator, joining Eric and I earlier today at the Goog on National Signing Day. Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. Thanks for joining us here on WSBT Radio. Eric goes one-on-one with Brian Kelly coming up in our next segment in about 7 minutes. But Eric, let me circle back. I led off the program by mentioning the six players Notre Dame signed today: Jones, Brown, Patterson, Keys, Flemister, and Boykin. For an average football fan that doesn't get into all the recruiting, they don't subscribe to the services, maybe the only time they even think about recruiting, they see something in the South Bend Tribune or they hear Tyler's feature here every Thursday on WSBT Radio. What would you say to them that is the one thing that they need to know or take away from what the Irish accomplished today?
I would say for the first two-stage recruiting cycle in modern college football, Notre Dame played the game very well. They did very well with the early signing period, and they did very well with the late signing period. They were able to get, as you mentioned, six kids today. Five of them were fresh commitments today. And in that, of those six, four of them were commitment flips. In total, Notre Dame got seven flips in this class, which I didn't think was possible with the early signing period. They lost three earlier in the early part of it. But I would say that's the most significant. I know people are upset. Some people are upset they don't see five stars in this class. And they don't always work. I mean, you can, as many as turn out to be stars like Quentin Nelson, you have Max Redfield, you have Greg Bryant, you have James Aldridge, you have guys that it didn't turn into, you know, even Dane Crist, who's one of my favorite players I ever covered, you know, he had a couple of injuries that changed the player he was. And so it's more about fit. Now, if Notre Dame were getting all 2 and 3 stars, then I'd say there's a problem. But I think when you look at their who they was at the top of their board, they did very well. I think Patterson is an example today of a kid that was at the top of their board, near the top of their board, that they were able to get away from UCLA. I think that is a tremendous acquisition, if I'm going to use the word tremendous signing, let's just say that.
Eric, when Brian Kelly was meeting the media earlier today, he mentioned there was an outside chance there could be another announcement before his comments were complete, and that actually turned out to be the case. I was sort of sitting in the middle portion of the Goog, and many of the staff and personnel were sitting just above me, and I heard a little ruckus while Brian Kelly was talking, and I turned around, there were some high fives, there were some smiles, and come to find out, they had just learned that cornerback Noah Boykin had signed with the Fighting Irish. So for there to be high fives and smiles, this must not be just your ordinary recruit. This is a four-star corner. How would you fill in the blank what this kid could mean to the program?
Yeah, I think, and we'll hear Brian Kelly's thoughts on it in the next segment, but my thought is he's the kind of cornerback that allows Notre Dame to play the kind of defense they want to play. He's got the top-end speed, and he's got length and height to really cause problems and to be able to do that press coverage and cover one-on-one. And it was, you know, it looked like it wasn't going to be Notre Dame for almost his entire recruitment. You know, he was a Maryland commit early, which Maryland is in his backyard. And then it was down to Florida and Notre Dame. And then all of a sudden Virginia was in there. And then all of a sudden it was Virginia and Notre Dame. It looked like it was going to be Virginia. And then Notre Dame comes away with it. You know, Notre Dame hasn't had a lot of those where they get a top end player that they weren't expecting at the 11th hour.
Braden Lindsey was a wide receiver that signed in December, originally a Notre Dame commit, then went to Oregon, then came back into the Notre Dame fold, brings a ton of speed to the wide receiver position. Today we found out that Lawrence Keyes signed with the Fighting Irish, 5'11 wide receiver. Rivals has him as the 15th best wide receiver in the country. Are their skill sets similar?
In terms of top-end speed, yes. I think that Keyes is a guy that is the more accomplished receiver at this point because he's put more into football and he's put more into being a wide receiver. Lindsey could have been a cornerback. I mean, he is absolutely top-end speed kind of guy. He's one of the fastest sprinters in Oregon, but he is going to play two sports at Notre Dame, and he's adamant about that. And so, is that going to take away? I don't think so, but I think to this point in his career, he's not as refined. It's going to happen for him, but he's got to sand off the rough edges of his game to be a contributor. And who knows how quickly that'll happen. That could happen freshman year. That could happen as a junior. You're just never quite sure.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. Get the latest on National Signing Day, Part 2, right now at ndinsider.com. Also in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports section. Coming up next, while I was hanging out with some of the assistant coaches, Eric hung out with Fighting Irish head football coach Brian Kelly. Eric's one-on-one with Coach Kelly, and this isn't just about recruiting. We talk about some big-picture items. BK discusses how there is a position change coming that you want to know about, and also what about some of the players dismissed from the program. Eric asked about them. All the details coming up after a break. You'll hear from Brian Kelly next as Sportsbeat continues. Brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Welcome back to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, 96.1 FM, WSBT on this National Signing Day. He is Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. Well, I hung out in the Goog waiting to talk to defensive coordinator Clark Lee. Eric Hansen was whisked away to the offices of Fighting Irish head football coach Brian Kelly. And Coach Kelly sat down with a one-on-one with our Fighting Irish football insider, Eric Hansen. think you're going to enjoy the conversation. A lot of good details coming out of this visit. Here's Eric with Fighting Irish head football coach Brian Kelly.
The two-stage signing cycle this year, Notre Dame ended up with 27 signees, the 27th being Noah Boykin. Can you take us through a little bit the 11th hour of this thing? Because it seemed like he was going back and forth. He was a guy you had to flip from another class. Yeah. How this kind of came together?
Well, it required attention from myself. Coach Light had done a great job of marshaling this whole process. And Coach Joseph. Clark Lee was involved as well. But I think we had a young man who really had to decide, do I want to settle for something close to home, or do I want to reach to be great? And sometimes that's hard to do, you know, when you're 17 years old, to make that kind of leap. And so we were there much more supportive, mm-hmm. in a sense that you can do this. We will provide you with the resources to be successful here, and we are certain that this is the right decision for you. So I think that just required time. As he was ready to make that decision, he just needed to know that he had 100% support from the staff here, not just one position coach, but the head coach and the defensive coordinator too.
We talk about out-of-profile kids, and for people that don't understand that, they're schools that typically don't send students to Notre Dame. Yes. I think your first one committed just before you took the job, Lewis Nix. What did you learn from that experience? What have you learned from other experiences about out-of-profile kids?
Well, when they don't come from, you know, a structured environment from an academic standpoint where they're being pushed to be the best they can be at times, where they can fail here is that they are immediately put into the same classroom as every student. It is at times, they're swimming in the deep end without a life preserver. So we have to make certain that they've got grit, that they're going to fight through adversity, that they're going to utilize the resources. So when they're out of that profile, they have to have strengths in other areas for us to take a chance with them. We've had some misses as well. I mean, you know, obviously Kevin Stefferson comes to mind, an out-of-profile school that we believed he had the right makeup, and it didn't work out that way. But we have to have many more hits for us to continue to go down that road, and we feel that Noah is one of them.
They closed a lot of the loopholes in terms of going past 25. One that they didn't close was early enrollees and being able to count backward. When did you get the sense that you thought you wanted to go over 25 with this class?
I think as we were developing through the season, the things that I saw, I needed to strengthen, as I mentioned in the press conference, 65 to 85, and those young players that we're committed to playing to help out our frontline players that are carrying a lot of the minutes, if you will, for our football team. I think I brought it up. We're a 700-plus winning percentage team in September and October, and we level off to 19 and 13 in the month of November. That's on me to figure out the things that we need to do better in November, and part of it is to strengthen that roster. So, that means you better be ready to roll if you're on scholarship at Notre Dame, because we need to count on you. There were too many players on this roster last year that were on scholarship that did not contribute in November that need to contribute.
You know, I don't think that you can win in this sense when you have a less than expected season. People think you're going to leave for some reason. If you have a better than expected season, people think you're going to leave for some reason. But I'm curious, do kids, you know, you're right now the second oldest Notre Dame coach ever. Only Lou Holtz was older when he left. And your contract would take you to be the first coach into his 60s to coach here. Do kids ask you about how much longer you're going to be here, what your future is like?
I don't get it a lot. I do get, will you be here to see me graduate? And, of course, I tell them that my plans are to coach only one college football team, and that's Notre Dame. I don't have an interest in coaching in the NFL. It doesn't The process is different there. You don't get the relationships with the players. You can't control all the factors that I can control here. Mm-hmm. So I just answer the question honestly. I don't get it with every family. But when I do, I try to be honest with them. I'm not going to coach at another college. This is where I want to be, and the NFL game doesn't appeal to me.
I think one of the cool things about cover Notre Dame is I've got brainwashed into watching offensive linemen and watching their highlights, and I saw the Kels kid in the Super Bowl, and I believe that's one of Jeff Quinn's proteges. Can you talk about their relationship a little bit and that development of that particular player and maybe how this translates to his new role here?
Well, Jeff was with me when he had the highest star he had was NR, not ranked, on the offensive line. And what we were able to do in terms of developing offensive linemen that were clearly not even nationally recruited players. Jason Kelsey was a walk-on defensive player that we moved. Joe Staley, who's a six-time Pro Bowler, he was a tight end. And so when he had those players, he's been able to develop them into NFL players. When they weren't NFL players, he's been able to develop them into really good offensive linemen with great technique. And so we were looking for a technician. We were looking for, I think you used pivoting. I think I would like to refer to it more as maintaining the continuity of that room, a close-knit group, somebody that was really good at relationships and building those relationships and knew Notre Dame very well. And I think that that's what Jeff brings. I know that when Jason just signed last year his big contract, he called his mom and dad, and he called Jeff Quinn. And so that says a lot about the relationship that he built with him.
In terms of the continuity there, obviously Jeff was around Harry for 3 years here. I mean, is he going to – does he teach similarly? Does he have similar philosophies? Do you want him to say, hey, Jeff, be who you are, put your own stamp on things? How do you kind of look at that?
Well, Harry has his own style, and I don't want Jeff to be anybody but Jeff. And look, I had plenty of opportunities to hire Jeff Quinn for other roles on this staff over the time that he was here. It wasn't the right fit. I was looking for the right time and the right fit to hire him. It didn't diminish who he was as a coach in my eyes, but when you're putting together 9 and 10 staff members, it has to be the right fit. When Harry decided to move on to the NFL, this opened up an opportunity for him. This was not a preordained position. He had to go win this job in the interview process. We opened this up nationally. We had some outstanding candidates apply for this job. And so he had to go through a process. Even though I knew what he was capable of, he had to be able to sell himself and what he could do here at Notre Dame. But I think he's going to be his own man. And I got a chance to see him. You'll see a football team, an offensive line, that will fit around what Chip wants to do offensively and continue to do that. So you better be able to run the football. You better be able to pass protect, pin and pull, get out on the perimeter. And I think that the other things that he can bring to the table will be exciting for us.
You know, I think had you been able to bring Jeff with you when you came from Cincinnati, people would have been jumping up and down then. And then last year, there was kind of the narrative of, some people that I've worked with in a long time, we need to change. And then you're hiring somebody that you had a past with, and people automatically say, well, wait a second, that's bad. That was, I'm curious, did you anticipate the reaction, and did you care about the reaction that you got?
I don't think that I cared. I always worry about my assistant coaches, right. But I knew that what we needed, I knew that it was important to hire the best person for the job. And if our those that follow us didn't know the relationship that I had and watched him, he was on a job interview for me for 19 years. So as well as the 3 years that he was here. So. I use the analogy at Christmas, right? You want that new gift, right? You want to open up something that you didn't know you were to get. And the things that you do need, right? like socks. You don't get too excited about socks. And I'm not trying to equate Jeff Quinn to socks, but that's how he was perceived.
Yeah.
They wanted something different because they didn't know what they wanted.
Right.
I knew what I needed for this football program.
As we look towards spring, I think a lot of us in the media have done some depth chart engineering for you, and we have moved Drew Tranquil from Rover to linebacker. I'm wondering if that is a realistic move that you're going to explore.
That's a realistic move.
Okay, and why does that make sense? Because you have such good talent at the Rover coming on with Jeremiah, with Shane Simon, with Asmar.
It has to do with Drew Tranquil. We think he's one of our best linebackers. His instincts, his ability to follow the ball, his ability to attack downhill, his ability to play in coverage. He's a three-down linebacker. It enhances his ability to come back for a fifth year relative to his draft stock. I want to be able to, those guys that come back for that final year, I want to put them in a position where not only can they help Notre Dame, but they can help themselves as well. Rovers are, they're not going to be the first group that's going to get drafted in the NFL. But linebackers that can stay on the field for all three downs, they're very appealing.
The four players you dismissed in January, there's been some speculation that there could be recourse for one or more of them to come back. What's your stance on that? Is there a back door for any of them to come back and get reinstated?
You know, I think what we said to all of them is that, their time at Notre Dame is about their academics. But there'll be one more meeting that I have with them. I have not committed to them one way or the other, that they'd have an opportunity or that they didn't have an opportunity. So it's similar to what I mentioned earlier, is that we don't close the door, but we tell them what their status is. Their status is that they are no longer with us, but we'll sit down with them at the end because they're here academically, and we'll have one more conversation with them before they either decide to stay here or move on.
I think we've all known somebody like Kevin Stefferson where there's a lot of goodness and you want to give him chances.
Yep.
And then they hit kind of a train wreck chapter and you say, this is a cry for help. This isn't just a kid making a bad decision. From a football program standpoint, from Notre Dame standpoint, do you feel a commitment to have to reach out and give him some resources to get this squared away?
So Eric, it's a great question, but it's based upon whether you felt like you failed the young man. Did you provide him the resources institutionally to handle his situation? We did things here at Notre Dame I don't believe that I've ever done before to help this young man. And there comes a time where somebody has to make a choice as to whether he's going to take advantage of all those resources. So there's been times in my career where I can clearly say, you know, we failed this young man. We didn't do enough. We weren't proactive enough. In this instance, we provided him with all the resources, the institution did as well, for him to be successful, and he continued to make the choices that he did.
That's Brian Kelly. I'm Eric Hansen, and this is WSBT Radio.
Look at that pro wrapping up that interview. Terrific interview. Great stuff there, Eric. My goodness, we could spend a lot of time on that conversation. So, one thing that stands out, Drew Tranquil is going to make that jump from Rover to Buck linebacker. He's a three-down linebacker, and he has proven to be a very efficient player on the defensive side of the football. And you heard Brian say this isn't maybe necessarily about anything else more than Drew Tranquil being one of our best linebackers. They've got what appears to be some pretty good depth at the Rover, but it seems like more than anything else, this is more about Drew Tranquil than all the other options or any other conversations.
Yeah, that surprised me a little. I thought, you know, again, when I heard rumblings that this might be happening, I kind of thought maybe they thought that the Rover group was stronger than the up-and-coming linebackers, but it was interesting that it was Tranquil that drove the move rather than, you know, who was coming up, who would fill that 11th starter spot better. And again, this is a team with 10 returning starters.
Also, you got into the dismissed players, and there was a conversation about a member of this class, and BK weaved in some Kevin Stefferson conversation. You want to follow up on that?
Yeah, I do. We were talking about out-of-profile kids, and you know, sometimes when you're doing these interviews, the coach is trying to be cognizant of keeping within a time frame, so he's not going to give as much detail. But he wasn't comparing Noah Boykin to Kevin Stefferson and saying this is an at-risk kid. What happens is Notre Dame has schools that they draw from on a regular basis in the regular student population. And a lot of times that's also where you go for football players. And Noah Boykin's high school happened to not be one of those. So the thing that Noah Boykin did that I want to stress is that he's a really intelligent kid. He worked really hard with his academics. And with the admissions office in his interview, he hit it out of the park. And that's how they determine whether a kid's a fit or not. So you're thinking outside the box. If you're Notre Dame, you could stay in that safe box all the time. And even then, you're going to have kids. There's attrition for one reason or another within those. This is about giving different kids opportunities. And I understand that. I went to a public high school, went to college, didn't have the best habits. And then it was kind of a rude awakening for me. I adjusted and was able to, you know, get out of the Ohio State University with a degree and earn a lot of Dean's List things along the way. But initially, it was culture shock for me. And I think that's what Brian was saying, that this is just a different structure for some of these kids, and they feel like Noah Boykin is going to be a hit in the classroom and on the field.
And also, BK said he's not interested in coaching at another college, and the NFL is not appealing to him, something we seem to go through quite often with Brian Kelly.
We will every year until whenever it is he's not here anymore. There will be speculation that he's going to want to work at the new Portillo's that's going in over here in Mishawaka.
I'm eating your party.
If he did work there, in fact, I would enjoy that because I like Portillo's, and maybe he could give us a discount.
Possibly. Great job, Eric, with that interview with Fighting Irish head football coach Brian Kelly. Coming up next, the My Five question of the day, the top five things that Eric learned on National Signing Day. That's next on WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
The top five things that Eric learned today on National Signing Day. We begin with number five.
It seems like every other cycle we're kind of in this spot that there wasn't a knock-your-socks-off defensive end in this class. Although, Justin Adamalola, I think people think he's maybe more one of the more underrated recruits. But Mike Elston said he feels like the 2019 cycle could be very good for defensive ends and defensive tackles.
Number four.
That Notre Dame has not closed the door to the grad transfer market, that they will be monitoring that. It doesn't seem like they have any more room, but the math always works out, and they are going to go for the best players that they can get. If it's a grad transfer, so be it.
The top five things that Eric learned on National Signing Day. Number three.
That flips slash poaching is still very much part of this process. I thought with the early signing period, that would cut down because you'd have 70% of the kids kind of signed, so there wouldn't be as much of that. Brian Kelly flipped seven guys, and that is the second most that he's done since he's been here. His first class had eight, and he lost three. They were all in the early period.
Number two,
going over 25 was about program depth. You know, Notre Dame could have stopped in the early, you know, low 20s and said, invited some marginal players back, fifth year option guys back. They decided not to. He felt like one of the reasons they weren't good in November was scholarship spots 65 through 85 weren't strong enough.
And the number one thing that you learned on National Signing Day.
That Notre Dame really played the two-stage cycle well, that they, instead of complaining about the early signing period, they just engaged and got kids in and signed 21 really good kids, and then they added six. They played the game very well.
That is today's My Five question of the day from Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, I will have the latest with Brian Kelly on the non-recruiting news. Tyler will have the latest on all the recruiting news on National Signing Day. And Mike will have a feature on new offensive line coach Jeff Quinn. We'll have high school wrestling in Michigan and much, much more.
Eric, thank you. Tom Noy joins me next. The Hour, WSBT South Bend.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Tom Noy and Darren Pritchett.
Hello. Final Four, baby! Here they come. The Irish are back. It is 6 minutes after the top of the hour. That is Tom Noy. From the South Bend Tribune, covers Fighting Irish basketball. Are you still the Fighting Irish basketball insider? I'm always tentative.
I am.
Okay.
I am the Notre Dame men's basketball insider for the South Bend Tribune and the sports columnist and whatever else you want to call me. And a lot of people choose door C. So,
very good. He had a front row seat for the Irish and the Eagles last night. And the 7-game losing streak is over.
Like you said in the email today.
That's exactly right.
Hawk.
It's almost baseball season. Got to work in those hawkisms, I'll tell you that much.
It's always baseball season in your world.
Well,
it is.
What in the hell are you doing?
There you go.
I'm Darren Pritchett, and it's great to have you with us for the second hour of Sports Beat. We're going to talk Notre Dame basketball coming up in our second segment. As the Irish come alive and they beat Boston College 96.
How about that?
To 85.
Who were those guys?
And a BC player almost put up a 50 burger.
Whoa. Jerome Robinson.
Hello, Jerome. Send it in, Jerome.
He did send it in.
Wow.
How about 15 to 23 from the floor? I went back and added it too, real quick, while I throw this basketball stat. He scored 20 points in a span of about 5 minutes in the second half. That's pretty good.
Dousers.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the Irish didn't need a 50 burger from TJ Gibbs, but a 28 burger on the side.
Big time onions!
Worked just fine.
Career night for TJ Gibbs, career night for John Mooney, and they get back to playing Notre Dame basketball as we've seen it for the last 18 years. Mm. They're moving it, they're sharing it, they're shooting it, and oh, by the way, they're scoring it. Mike Bray said afterward, he's like, eh. Well, when all else fails, let's just throw 96 on the board. So good to see. Only one win, not out of the woods by any means. Big tests still to come with Florida State, North Carolina, and Boston College rematch next three games. So we're not making any NCAA tournament picks or predictions just yet. But they just needed to start somewhere. Tuesday was the starting point.
Before the game at Clemson, we came up with the road to 9-9. We picked the wins. And right now, they're still one behind my pace because I had them beating Virginia Tech. They lost that game.
Yeah.
They lost to Clemson, lost to Duke, lost to NC State as I projected. I had them beating BC, so they're still minus one right now. So maybe that game I'll get back is at BC.
Got to get that back. That's why those two home games were just crushers, because you had to really get those to feel good about your resume. So we'll see what happens Saturday. Sold out Purcell Pavilion for Florida State. And then Monday at the Smith Center.
For a little Carolina home cooking.
Yes.
More basketball talk coming up.
Later. We got to get to the big news of the day.
You were hijacking a football segment. It was hockey last night. It's football today. You're just causing havoc.
Last night? No, it was Monday.
Oh, it was Monday.
That's we were all basketball last night.
You're exactly
our
right.
Our two separate.
And I never brought up hockey. I never interfered with our basketball talk. Do you see how polite I was?
So you're saying I'm not polite. Is that what you're saying? What if I just pull a Josh McDaniels right now and I'm done.
Out of here.
I'm leaving.
See ya.
You do the show alone. Leaving. See ya.
Well, that means you would have got a very nice incentive package from the South Bend Tribune to leave. Just like he did. He got a little bit more to stay.
from Bill Belichick?
That's right.
How about the, you can be my successor in 2 years?
That might have something to do with
Could
it.
Could be.
Possibly. All right, so on National Signing Day, just to recap, six players signed with the Irish today. The big news was cornerback Noah Boykin, a four-star corner, picked the Irish over Florida and Virginia. Huge news. There's an article up right now at ndinsider.com if you'd like to learn more about this outstanding corner. There's now five guys in this class that can play the cornerback position. Good news considering there were zero in last year's class. DJ Brown also picked the Irish today, the corner. Picked Notre Dame over Northwestern in California, a three-star recruit, number 70 overall corner, according to 247sports.com. They get two more offensive tackles. Luke Jones, we knew, was going to sign, but Jared Patterson picked the Irish over UCLA, 247 Sports. Your guy, Steve Wilfong,
there you go.
National Recruiting Insider, has Patterson 17th best at the tackle position in the class of 2018. He's a four-star. They get wide receiver Lawrence Keys, another speedster at 5'11", picked the Irish over Texas and SMU, ranked 15th by Rivals in the wide receiver group. And then running back, Sebo Phlemster, 6 foot, 192.
Sebo.
I like that.
I do too.
Sebo Phlemster.
Easy to type on deadline. Sebo.
C apostrophe, capital B, O. Sebo.
And there you go.
And he joins Jameer Smith, Dexter Williams, and T.J. Jones Jr. as the running backs during Eric's conversation with Brian Kelly that we played last hour. Brian mentioned, you know, there's still a chance a dismissed player could return to the team. We'll see. We'll see. Maybe a running back's one of those guys. But they're going to have another conversation to see how things are before they depart or stay. So we'll see.
To be determined.
Also from that interview, Brian talked about Drew Tranquil moving from Rover to the Buck linebacker spot. And also BK mentioned that he's not going to coach at another college, and the NFL does not appeal to me, end quote. And that is a highly popular retweet when I posted that on Twitter just a little bit ago, because we all remember after the national title game in 12, there was the flirtation with the Philadelphia Eagles, and I think we have all said the fantasy site that had the BK talking to the Bears just was a ridiculous conversation. So see, that's how things get started. People believe, even this fantasy site that no one has heard of, if they posted it, well, it must be true.
And I have no problem with Brian Kelly talking with the Philadelphia Eagles. You have to.
Absolutely.
You have
not.
To explore what's best for your coaching career. Like everybody says, oh, Brian Kelly, he's got to stay at No. There is no loyalty in coaching. None. You're loyal to you as to what's best. What can I do to maximize myself as a professional on that end, and then also from a financial standpoint, let me explore the NFL. Maybe the NFL appealed to Brian Kelly after the 2012 National Championship game. Maybe 6 years later, he says, you know what? I've taken another look at it. I'm good where I'm at right here in college. So it's what you have to do if you're a professional in any walk of life.
If he looks into the Wake Forest or Oregon State job, we're having a different conversation. But if you want to just learn about the NFL, see what it's all about, stick your nose in there, I've got no problem with that.
None.
Average Joe can do the same thing with their job. Have a job they enjoy. If someone contacts them or they see something, they'll just, let me see. Let me check it out. That's what he did. Apparently, it's different with coaches.
Guess so.
So that's some of the headlines today. And again, the South Bend Tribune will have more tomorrow. And right now, everything's available at ndinsider.com. So while Eric was going one-on-one with head coach Brian Kelly in BK's office at the Goog, I sat down with Fighting Irish defensive coordinator Clark Lee, new to the job, linebacker coach last year, taking over for Mike Elko as the team's new defensive coordinator.
Well, Clark, a busy day for this football program. Noah Boykin comes in at the last second. Your thoughts on him and the quarterback haul you guys had in this class?
You know, Noah is a long, competitive, athletic, plays both ways. There's just no way that he doesn't enhance your roster. And so we're thrilled to have him. You know, the thing that people don't know about Noah is, you know, this is a guy that in the summers was doing academic camps and like digging into his schoolwork, and just in every way has distinguished himself throughout his life. And so I'm anxious for him to come to Notre Dame and be able to do that here. You know, outside of Noah, we've got a really talented secondary group coming in, and specifically the corners with Joe and Tariq. You have again two-way players that are dynamic athletes that you know we're thrilled to have. Both have unique skill sets that'll be able to come in and make a difference. Houston, who's already here, is a guy that you know we've been really pleased with how he's acclimated, and coming from IMG, he should. You know, he's been trained at the highest level, and so that's been not a pleasant surprise, but it's been just neat to see that come to fruition. So that's been cool. And then DJ Brown, I mean, DJ, you know, you just don't see a lot of the 6'1", 190 frames walking around. Not to mention the fact that he's from a fit school. Not to mention the fact that he exudes Notre Dame when you talk to him in person. And so he's got big things ahead for him too. We're excited to have him. All those guys will find their way into roles here early, I would imagine. And you know, I think we've enhanced our length and athleticism back there, which is great.
Houston is penciled in as a boundary corner right now. What part of his skill set makes him a good fit there for right now?
Yeah, well, I think it's the boundary corner is a spot where you need to be physical, because that guy is going to be counted into the run game more so than the field corner. You need to be able to blitz. So those guys are generally like kind of bigger bodied alpha personalities. And then when you play like 3-by-1 sets, that guy is in a lot of instances kind of locked up on the X receiver. And so again, that alpha mindset, that kind of things get on you fast over there. And so you need to be able to just react. That's where we think he can do it. But those guys will all, as they come in, they'll learn both. And at the end of the day, you know, the field corner being a little more technical, things happen a little slower, but needing a little more discipline when it comes to staying on top of routes and staying in between routes. These guys will be able to do both.
Now, this guy I'm going to ask you about is not, of course, a signee, but you got to know a lot about Aloy Gilman over the past year. What did you learn about him just seeing him in the practice setting? And also, it sounds like he was so good at times that you almost had to take him out of scout teams.
Yeah, that I heard that from the offensive coaches. And you love that, because it would be easy for him to see this year as a year where he's just taken off biding his time. And he didn't. You know, he poured in. I mean, that guy was on our sideline in street clothes all year. You know, he is unique. He is, his leadership qualities from two standpoints. One, he's been trained as a leader, and I talked to him about this the other day. I mean, you know, his experience at Navy is formative. I mean, he was trained as a leader at the highest level, and that's going to make him unique in this setting, and he's prepared for it. But beyond that, his ability to relate with his teammates. I mean, I've never seen a guy that's so infectious in a positive way. I mean, just charismatic. The guys like him in a short amount of time. He made really close friends and tight relationships. And so that is breeding grounds for a dynamic leader, you know. And I think in his mind, he's got to go out and perform. But he has the confidence to do that. And so I'm anxious to see him grow and develop in that leadership role and hopefully add another dynamic player in the middle of our defense.
Clark, after Coach Kelly was in with the media, we had the chance to talk to him for an interview back in his office, and he was describing just how much of an impact Drew Tranquil had on this football team, and he was discussing, you know, the move to the Buck linebacker spot, just how good of a fit is he, and it seems to get pretty good depth at the Rover position to make this particular move.
Well, we want to enhance not only the defensive output, but the opportunity for each player to reach their potential. And so for Drew, you know, he's played Buck already. He played it on third down. And so, you know, he has positional flexibility, not to mention the fact that he's one of the most powerful guys on our roster. And so, you know, that's a natural thing to take a look at to see if it fits him and see if he can do it at a high level. And you know, as we've been able to bring in long athletic players, that's the, you know, the Rover position. And so having those body types out there will allow for us to have some positional flexibility, which will allow us to put the best three on the field.
Sure seems like you brought in a pretty good Rover in Shane Simon.
yeah, I think, a complete Notre Dame fit, a guy that's a competitor, that's a winner, and you know, on top of that, a really talented athlete.
Just a couple of thoughts from you on looking ahead to next fall. I would assume the defense foundation stays the same with some of your tweaks?
Defense foundation stays the same. My tweaks won't be my tweaks. It'll be as we watch the season as a staff. How do we need to evolve the package? You know, what does the modern offense require of us to defend? And then, you know, my personality interjected in certain areas, but the continuity piece is the most important. And I want these guys to know the calls, to know how they're lining up, to know how they're playing, and that way we can be as fast and as physical as we possibly can.
Finally, what a remarkable year by Tavon Coney, helping this defense become what it was in 2017. I'm not sure how much you can offer, but he had a big decision to make whether to go to the NFL or not. What type of input did you give him? Again, what you can tell us.
Well, I don't mind sharing with the first conversation is, hey, Tavon, everything that I'm going to tell you from this point forward is biased because I want you back. I want to coach you. And then from there, you gain a level of trust where you can actually have a real conversation. And you just try to tell him what type of experience awaits them here, how you feel like you can improve and enhance their current skill set and give them a launch point for the career that awaits them down the road. On the flip side, you know, I think it's important that you take a turn in their shoes and say, hey, Tavon, this is why you would leave, you know, I mean, and understand that and appreciate that. Because at the end of the day, as biased as we are, our job is to support these guys. And that's a huge life decision and one that when it's made, you know, you can only cast off once. And you want them to be as prepared as they can be, but you want them, more importantly, to know that, hey, you have their back and you're supporting them and you're going to have them their best interest in mind no matter what.
Clark, thanks for the time. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
That is Clark Lee, the new Fighting Irish defensive coordinator. His thoughts from earlier today at the Goog on National Signing Day. Many more interviews to get to over the next couple of days as we caught up with the Fighting Irish coaching staff. But next, we're going to talk some Fighting Irish basketball. They're back in the win column as they took down Boston College. We needed a victory. Bring Boston College to town because Notre Dame has owned the Eagles on the hardwood, whether it be in Chestnut Hill or in South Bend.
I thought you were going to say they're back in the NCAA tournament picture.
Not yet. If they can beat Florida State and if they can win at North Carolina,
then it gets interesting.
We'll have a conversation.
Oh, yes, we will.
But I don't think it's time to jump
to
conclusions as of yet. But they played a very solid game last night, and we'll get to all the details coming up in a matter of moments here as SportsBeat continues. Tom Noy, Darren Pritchett with you. We'll leave some football conversation for basketball next on WSBT.
Farrell over the midcourt stripe. Farrell inside to Gibbon, who dunks it, and Notre Dame leads 11-7. Pfluger with a basketball now. Left side, Farrell for three. Got it. Matty Ice comes through. Pfluger into Gibbs. Gibbs over the midcourt stripe. Gibbs, top of the key. Gibbs, the runner, off the box and in. He did it again. TJ Gibbs for the second consecutive home game. Throws it in at the buzzer, and it's 46-38. Notre Dame leading by eight.
Jack Nolan with the call on WSBT Radio Lab, the Notre Dame Basketball Radio Network. A W for the Irish. They take down the Boston College Eagles 96-85, ending the seven-game losing streak. They're now 4-7 in the Atlantic Coast Conference, and maybe they found their shooting eye last night. Tom Noy, they hit 52% of their shots from the field. How about 16 of 29?
Yee.
55%
from three.
From the three-point line. As the Irish, a big, got interesting, ended up winning by 11. So, as you watched that game courtside last night at Purcell Pavilion, do you feel like what you witnessed against Boston College is repeatable against Florida State Saturday?
Absolutely. And I think it can be, and it should be. Will it be? Stay tuned. But What they found last night, DP, was flow, like Mike Bray talked about in the postgame. They assisted on their first 10 baskets. They had 10 assists. That was... Are you getting an email? Are you getting another notification on Twitter?
I think you were so brilliant, the bells are going off.
I think it's going off. So I wasn't the only one that was hearing that. Maybe I thought that was going off in my head. I don't know. Where was I?
Ride the hot player.
Thanks, Raft. But to see them get 10 assists on their first 10 baskets, that's stuff we haven't seen in a long time during this losing streak, to where they're moving and they're passing and they're cutting and they're... And guys are getting the ball in an open area and being decisive with it. They're not running the shot clock down under 10 seconds and then trying to throw up some bailout shot. If they have an open shot, they're taking it. And you know what? Yesterday they were making it to the tune of 52.5% from the field. So it's amazing what happens when the ball goes in the basket. And it did last night. It hadn't for the last 30 days.
TJ Gibbs, I got to be honest, coming into this year, I thought he was going to be a very nice complimentary piece. Now, due to injuries, he has taken on a larger role.
Mm-hmm.
But, Tom, my perception of TJ Gibbs has totally changed from what I saw last year and even early on this year. He is turning into a dependable, dare I say, marquee player for this program and the Atlantic Coast Conference. Now, he's probably not going to get the ACC notoriety this year.
Which he should, though.
Well, he should, but he's going to be on a team that's probably headed for a bottom half of the ACC finish, barring a big turnaround. They might be an under 500 team. They're on a team with Bonzi Colson and Matt Farrell, and he probably is not going to get the recognition. Because when in doubt, the folks on Tobacco Road stay home with their vote. Let's be honest. So he's probably not going to get what he deserves. But as you analyze TJ Gibbs as a recruit last year and early on this year, did you see him being the future of this program offensively? Maybe the go-to guy, the marquee player for the next couple of years?
Not this early, because you figured it was going to be Bonzi Colson and Matt Farrell, and maybe a little bit more of Rex Pfluger. And TJ Gibbs was just going to continue his ascension into maybe rotating into that role sometime as a junior or definitely as a senior. But as a sophomore, going for a career-high 28 points last night, hitting his first four threes, and he's a big-shot guy. He's becoming a big-shot moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take it, and I'm going to knock it down, and I'm going to play. The situation with TJ is, he's so hard on himself that it tends to kind of derail his game a little bit. If he can just not be so critical of himself, if he misses a shot or he has a turnover or he doesn't do something he's supposed to do and just moves on to the next play, he's really good. But I did not see a career high 28 points and playing all 40 minutes and getting to the point now where TJ Gibbs is just the latest in a long line of point guards in his program to where he just doesn't come off the floor. Like, you need him on the floor. He went out and sat down for about 38 seconds, and then Mike Bray said, TJ, goes back into the game just before halftime and then hits that runner at the buzzer for the three-pointer to go into the locker room at intermission. So he's a guy that's just, I know Luke May's probably going to get it, but if Notre Dame was having a better year, forget Mike Bray's politicking of Martin Gebben as most improved. You got to look at TJ Gibbs as one of the most improved players in this league, because he's doing things that we didn't really expect him to do as a sophomore.
Well, I hope TJ's not beating himself up after last night, because as you mentioned, in 40 minutes, 8 of 11 from the field, 5 of 7 from 3, 7 of 7 from the free throw line, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, and 1 turnover in 40 minutes. The Irish cut their turnovers down to 5. That's the Fighting Irish basketball we've come to know for many, many years.
You know why they cut it down to 5? Look at what the final stat sheet says. The hidden stat that you're not going to see if you just look at it. Look at the minutes of the 5 main guys.
Like we talked about last night, it was time to cut down the rotation.
You got to cut the rotation, and you've got to ride Martin Gebben, Rex Pfluger, Matt Farrell, TJ Gibbs, and John Mooney.
Agreed.
There's your 5.
That's
done.
That's it.
You can't mess around with Maybe we can get Austin Torres 27 minutes.
Can't happen.
Maybe we can see what Elijah Burns does.
Mm-mm.
Maybe this is the day that Nick Joe. No.
No, sir.
That five is going to carry this team as far as it's going to go.
Great. I agree.
And when you have those five playing together, see, that was the five that we were supposed to see in Raleigh. But then when John Mooney sprains his ankle, then Mike Bray's back to, okay, now what am I going to do? Maybe Torres, maybe Burns, maybe Jogo, maybe this, maybe that. And they had, what, 13 turnovers. When you get that, when you get a core group of guys playing together, that's how this program looks. 21 assists, 5 turnovers, 96 points. That's Notre Dame basketball right there.
Tom Noy, Darren Pritchett talking Irish basketball. That is 36 minutes after the top of the hour. Normally on Wednesdays at this time, we have a Chicago Cubs prospect report. We're going to do that tomorrow at 6:30. I asked you last night, from being courtside in Raleigh for the NC State game, the second half, did we start to see the old Matt Farrell pre-injury? And you felt like the answer was yes. Last night, 7 of 15 from the field, 5 of 11 from 3. Didn't hit a free throw for 4.
What's up with that?
That's really strange.
That was bizarre.
But 19 points, 7 assists, 38 minutes, and he cut his turnovers down to 2. So that built on what you saw Saturday, and now all of a sudden I think we've got the old Matt Farrell back, which is a really, really good thing coming down the stretch. They have to have him playing well.
And the games against Louisville and Clemson, Matt Farrell, you could just tell, you could tell by his body language and his facial expressions out on the floor that, that it was just, and what he said afterward in the double overtime loss to Louisville, he really wasn't sure of himself. Like, I think I can play, I got to play. But last night was the old Matt Farrell postgame to where he's really confident in his game. He feels healthy. He feels good. And when he's feeling good without Bonzi Colson, they need it. They need a second guy in addition to Martin Gebben, a second senior captain that these guys can kind of feed off of. And TJ Gibbs is able to feed off Matt Farrell. Rex Pfluger is able to feed off Matt Farrell. So when Farrell's good, and he was good last night, this is a good basketball team.
I admit I'm a Rex Pfluger guy. I'm a fan of his. I like the way he plays the game. He's one of those guys that will go down on the floor and get a little dirty. He's very, very good defensively, which also makes him one of my favorites. He's got the great lettuce working, too.
He does.
I mean, if he was a hockey player, he would have great lettuce. Let's be honest. The hairdo is fantastic. And he's just struggled putting the ball in the basket. Good for him last night. 4 for 7, 2 out of 3 from 3, 13 points, 6 assists in 33 minutes. Sign me up for that.
This was a big sigh of relief game for Rex Pfluger.
Oh, no question.
And he was the only starter. Well, he was the only guy that scored double figures that wasn't in the post-game locker room, the media access. I'm like, where's Rex? Like, he had 6. The nice number I see, again, for Rex Pfluger is 6 assists. So, yeah, he's struggling with his shot, but he's still finding guys. I think he had a career-high 7 assists against North Carolina State on Saturday in that forgetful game. So he's finding other ways to impact games. But for him to hit a couple of shots and confidently hit the shot, he hit the fade jumper in the lane when they were dying for a bucket. He hit a step-back 3. So maybe now Rex Pfluger is through his foggy period to where he's not dwelling so much on, I got to hit a shot. That's a perfect line for him. Go 4-7 from the field, 2-3 from 3, get to the line 4 times, get 13 points and 6 assists, and only turn over once in 33 minutes.
Beautiful.
While trying to guard a guy that nobody could guard yesterday. That's a pretty good line for Rex Pfluger.
So as we exit this game, a 96-85 Notre Dame victory over Boston College, help Irish fans separate the good from this game from the opponent that they played. I mean, how much of this was just Notre Dame locking in and playing great basketball, and how much was it they were playing a bottom of the ACC team?
Well, they're not a bottom of the ACC team right now, though.
Well, they're in
Notre
the bottom
Dame
half.
Notre Dame was a bottom of the ACC team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're now tied for 12th place. Notre Dame would get that in the head-to-head tiebreaker. There's still so much that has to be determined.
Sure.
But Boston College is a really good team that just needs... They struggle on the road. We talked about it last night. 5-35 in Notre Dame's 5 years in the ACC. That's Boston College on the road. So They're good. We talked about last night. Jerome Robinson's good. Jordan Chapman, very good player. Kai Bowman, one of the underrated players in the league. It's just they have not gotten to the point where they can figure it out. And so there were going to be windows for Notre Dame to slam it shut on Boston College, and they were able to do that. It doesn't matter if it was Boston College or Wake Forest or Pittsburgh last night. Notre Dame just needed a win, however they got it. Doesn't matter they blew an 18-point lead. Doesn't matter it was a one-possession game the last 6 minutes. Doesn't matter if Notre Dame went again for long stretches without a basket. Okay. They just needed a win to feel good.
So this was more about Notre Dame's execution than the opponent.
Absolutely.
That's what I was looking for.
Absolutely.
Well, let's hear from the head coach.
Mike Bray.
Mike Bray was on the Notre Dame Basketball Network, heard on WSBT Radio last night. His courtside interview with Jack Nolan and Zach Hillsland last night. And here's what Coach Bray had to say about the 96-85 victory over Boston College.
That looked like us, didn't it? We were moving and flowing, and to put 96 up, we made 16 threes. I mean, I'm hoping we can build on that. I'm really proud of our group, Jack. I mean, it's been a while since we've gone in the locker room and celebrated a win, a long while, you know, and I chest bumped with Matt Gregory, and I missed him because I'm out of practice, you know. But I told them, you know, before we started with the NC State game and the second nine, I called it the back nine. I said, let's see what we do in the back nine. You know, let's see if we can inch along in the back nine and make a move. We're 1-1 on the back nine. I tore the stats up before, so, and I said, our goal is to have a two-game homestand win streak and see if we can beat Florida State. But a lot of guys did a lot of good things, and I don't know what to do with Robinson. That guy's unbelievable.
That is a record-setting performance. No one has ever scored more than 40 in Purcell Pavilion before. Jerome Robinson, 46 tonight. But I want to get back to all the work you've done on this floor. One of the words you've been using is flow. It's hard to get back into a flow when you're not playing with the same guys. And John Mooney not being able to play really at all at NC State hurt you. You had 3 days with the same guys healthy, and you got back in the flow.
Yeah, I think there's no question. We were able to get some reps. Matt Farrell, I think you see, is really close to 100% now and has worked off some rust. I thought he had some rust still in Raleigh, rightfully so. Johnny's healthy again. You know, he gave us some really good stuff. Martin Gebben in the post again, you know, and then it was neat to see TJ and Matt Farrell just really explode offensively together, you know, and that's what we were a while ago. Yeah. Seems
like a month ago.
Seems like last season almost, but something to build on, I hope.
Coach, that second half, I'm sure you got a little bit tight there as Robinson started knocking down absolutely everything he was taking, but it seemed like every time that they were looking to take the lead, you had a big shot happen. Rex hit three big jumpers in that half. Matt Farrell was knocking down some daggers that had to feel pretty good while you were watching.
We had some guys really make some clutch plays and some big shots, and, you know, that's kind of who our program has been, you know, here. And, again, we haven't done it much up until tonight, but, you know, you just hope it's something to build on. These guys deserve a night to celebrate, man. They've been trying and grinding and working for 5 weeks, and I'm glad for them to smile a little bit in the locker room.
And we'll keep our fingers crossed, but if nothing else happens, this is going to be your nucleus for the next 2-3 weeks for sure, and it looks like they have put it together enough where you are again right in there to beat just about anybody that you play.
Yeah, if we can score, you know, we just couldn't score there for a while. If we can score it, you know, we're going to have a chance. And I think this jump starts us a little bit. 21 assists, 5 turnovers. Those are some numbers like the old days, you know. It looks good to see that.
And, you know, you had lost 7, but you told your fans that they helped you before. You needed them tonight, and they came out again, and they helped you a lot.
Our fans have been fabulous. Our students have been great. And, you know, again, I think we'll have an unbelievable atmosphere with Florida State here on Saturday. But our fans have been fabulous. I think they know how much we need them this year, and we do. And they helped us tonight. There's no question.
And that Florida State series, they are super athletic. They're very good. They've had some big wins. So you're going to have to play this way again.
Yeah, no, we're going to have to put numbers on the board because they can score it, and they're huge. And we're going to have to spread them out a little bit, and we're going to have to make shots. You know, we made shots tonight. We shot it well, and there's no reason why we shouldn't shoot it well. We went to a period there in January where we really missed some open looks, and hopefully this gets us feeling more confident about open shots.
Something tells me you'll sleep well tonight.
A little better. Yeah, I'll sleep a little better. You know, but we'll wake up and we'll think about the Seminoles tomorrow.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
There you go.
You know what it does? This game does for this team? And Mike Bray said at the end, it gives them so much confidence because watching the the game this morning, he's telling the TV guys, I don't know if we can run with Boston College. We're going to have to keep the game in the 60s. That they were able to get to 96, that gives them the confidence to say, okay, maybe we can go up and down the floor with Florida State, which is crazy athletic and can score and is not afraid to win anywhere on the road. To be able to do this now gives this team the belief that, yeah, we can't score because they just couldn't score almost the entire month of January.
Hmm. Worth noting for folks coming out to Notre Dame for an athletic event on Saturday, we're going to have a bit of one of those train wreck days.
Oh, yes.
We've got Notre Dame basketball at 4, and we've got the Irish hockey team at 7:05. So as people are leaving, people are coming in. So a challenge for the Irish hockey team. They need to win the Big Ten conference title Friday night. So then all the fans that have tickets to both don't have to rush and worry and walking across the parking lot. We can reduce the stress level by winning that banner and the ring Friday night. Mm-hmm. And then Saturday, it'll be just a nice, relaxing evening at the Compton Family Ice Arena after the Irish basketball team takes down Florida State.
It'll be a Saturday night glide at Compton. Just chill. Chill.
My parking space will not be available, will it, at the Compton?
I got a front row parking spot yesterday.
Front row, baby. I'll be parking 5 miles away.
You'll be parking over by the Goog. Why is parking such a hassle over there?
I don't know.
Why?
Everybody asks me that. I go, I'm just the announcer. I don't know. I wish I had a parking spot.
Why does the University of Notre Dame make it so difficult, than more difficult than what it needs to be? I mean, you've just got to develop. There's nowhere, I'm trying to think on the road, where it's just such a nightmare.
Purdue can be difficult around Mackey Arena.
Can
just because there's not a lot of parking. I remember the time I went to a game just as a fan, I parked like 5 blocks away just in the middle of a housing district.
Mm-hmm.
Really no place to park.
I left.
I was aware of.
I left PNC Arena after the North Carolina State game about 25 minutes after the game. You couldn't even tell there was a basketball game. It was a sellout crowd. They had 19,500 people there. You couldn't even tell. There, other than maybe 50 students standing in line for one of the buses back to campus,
yeah.
Couldn't tell. At Notre Dame, it's just a nightmare.
It's out of my pay grade.
It's out of all of ours.
Don't know. 12 minutes in front of the top of the hour, he's Tom Noy, Fighting Irish Basketball Insider for the South Bend Tribune. Columnist as well. I'm Darren Pritchett. More Sports Beat coming up on this Wednesday evening on 96.1 FM WSBT. Your home for the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament is 96.1 FM WSBT. Tom Noy.
Hello.
Filling in for Sean Steyers again tonight. I'm Darren Pritchett. Big time showdown in the grand old Big Ten Conference tonight.
Your Big Ten conference.
Well, Notre Dame hockey's in the Big Ten. I feel like it's our conference, right? It's our conference mates.
If you had a choice between watching Big Ten basketball or ACC basketball, which you pick?
Which one? If it was just a general game.
Yeah.
I would watch the Big Ten.
You would watch Iowa Rutgers over Virginia Tech and Wake Forest.
Yes. I would, yes.
I wouldn't watch either of them.
That's what I grew up with.
I know.
So I'm guilty. I'm guilty.
Guilty as charged.
And plus, I mean, that's my conference now.
It is.
We'll have the Ohio State University at the Compton Friday and Saturday.
Your Big Ten team.
The Ohio State Buckeyes are 11-1 on the basketball side, and the Purdue Boilermakers, a shiny 12-0. Can they run the table?
I'm telling you, I don't think Ohio State's getting out of Mackey Arena with a win.
No, sir. Carson Edwards, sophomore, he has developed into a special player. 16 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, a ball game. They're so balanced, it's hard for anyone to be a star because they're so good defensively. They share the ball. They're old.
And Carson Edwards is just playing magnificent basketball right now.
I want to be a. I want to buy in on Purdue. I want to go all in on Purdue.
What do you need?
I want to go all in on Purdue. But I keep coming back to the fact that this Purdue team lost to the Lithuanian junior national team with Martin Gebin. They couldn't handle Martin Gebin in the World University Games in Taiwan back in the summertime. Purdue lost as the representative of the United States of America to Lithuania.
You're going to hold that against them?
I'm not saying I'm holding it against them. I'm saying every time I want to go all in on Purdue, I'm reminded that they lost that game. That's all.
A lot has happened since then. I mean, they've lost to Western Kentucky since then. That's the last time they've lost.
They lost to Western. They lost to the Hilltoppers?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Then they beat Arizona the next game. That's when everybody was beating Arizona.
That's when Arizona was like...
They got last in that Invitational
in the Atlantis.
In that hotel thing.
Battle for Atlantis in the second floor hotel ballroom down there in the Bahamas.
Carson Edwards, Vincent Edwards, Isaac Haas, Dakota Mathis in his backyard hoop. Tough to contend with right now. Tough to deal with.
They're a team with a lot of swagger right now. They believe. They've got that vibe, as Mike Bray would say, that Notre Dame did not have for the whole month of January.
I'm guilty. I'm pulling for them. It's been since 1980, since they got to the Final Four, and Gene Katie never could get there. 2000 was the shot. All they do was beat Wisconsin in 8 seed. Couldn't get it done.
Couldn't get it done.
Could not get it done. Who do you like tonight?
I'm going Purdue.
I like Purdue as well.
Purdue.
I think Purdue's...
Although I love Chris Holtmann as a coach.
Yeah, he's dangerous in Columbus. There's some dangerous coaches coming into the Big Ten right now.
Yes, there are.
There could be a little turnover in who's on top and who's on bottom here very, very soon.
Brad Underwood.
Underwood? Holtmann? I think the Patino Minnesota thing may dip a little bit. Who knows how long he's going to stay there? And we'll see what happens to Michigan State. That's kind of the wild card. What happens with that program if there's anything that we don't know about?
That'd be interesting.
We'll leave for a second. More Sports Beat.
Bye.
Coming up on WSBT. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Thanks for the last 3 days, Tom Noy. Enjoyed it.
Great sitting in with you. I'll see you down the road.
Absolutely. It's the top of the hour. WSBT, South Bend.